this morning. And as always, I have a picture that I took this week. Why in the world would I have a 1962 Chevy Greenbrier van for my cover photo? We saw this the other night at Village Inn, and it smelled like gasoline. I don't know why, but it just really, really, as junky as that thing is, it probably leaked like a sieve. Wouldn't you? That's a Waffle House cruiser right there. Yeah, I think those seats were like lawn chairs or something. I thought this might be the Chariot of Fire when a guy fires that thing up. Just light it driving down the road. I could just see it happening. So anyway, yeah, that thing's seen a lot of life to it. What's that? Brand new tires and wheels, though. You never can tell. There's some people who get some stuff, and they fix it up pretty cool. So maybe he's firing up the mystery machine again. He's going to get Daphne and Velma together. I don't know, but anyways. So we're going to talk about Elijah and Elisha today. Today we'll finish up our Old Testament story, our Old Testament survey of Elijah. From here on out, it'll be New Testament. I think we'll have a little bit in Malachi next week. But basically, this is the end of Elijah, as far as the Bible story of him goes. So today it's going to be 2 Kings 2. It's going to look at the time of separation, the dividing of the Jordan, the chariot of fire, and the needless search. If you want a 60-second story of it, today is the day that God will take Elijah up to heaven in a whirlwind. Elisha, the true friend and the prophet to succeed him, is with him to the very end. That's the story. If you get called out because your kid didn't have the hand stamp this morning or something like that, you've already got the story. So, all righty. 2 Kings 2, I'm going to just start right out with it. Verse 1. Now, when the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven by a whirlwind, Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgal. It was just a regular day, just like every other day. And that's kind of what the story is. It just starts. This is just a day. It's like, today's the day that Elijah's going to be called up to the heaven in a whirlwind. That's just how it is. That's the only difference. It's just a regular day, except today's the day that Elijah gets called up. I couldn't find any prophecy of this. I expected there to be a prophecy that, because it just kind of states it. You just kind of think, well, maybe I knew this from somewhere else. No, it's just the day that it happens. And there's no prophecy ahead of time. But Elijah and Elisha both seem to know what's going to happen. And they're ready for it. It's a kind of a strange thing that they just seem to know. So anyways, today's the day. Where does our journey begin? I'm going to take a little journey first. Gilgal. What's my next one? No. Scholars say that this is not the Gilgal where Joshua led the people through the Jordan in the first end in Canaan. This is not the same Gilgal. Apparently, this is a common name that many places were named Gilgal. Because the first time I read it, it's like, okay, this is where, it kind of when they came into Canaan, this would have been the place. That'd be a nice place to start this final journey of Elijah, but it's not. It reminded me of a story. When I worked for the Air Force, when I was in college, some of the guys went out to Arkansas to install some stuff on a telescope, laser. Anyways, some of the guys went out there, and not all of them ended up at the same place. They had to go to a place called Oak Grove, Arkansas. Well, it turned out there were 10 places in Arkansas named Oak Grove. This is no lie. 10 places. They brought back a map, and they had them all circled, and they put it up because people went to the wrong ones. I copied this map of the counties of Arkansas. I put little red stars in counties that have a place called Oak Grove in Arkansas. Isn't that crazy? I think there's 11. There's 11 places named Oak Grove. One of those is Oak Grove with no space, but the other ones are called Oak Grove. According to Wikipedia, that exists. So apparently Gilgal is the same place. Which Gilgal are you from? Oh, the one over there. That Gilgal. So Oak Grove. Go ahead. Yeah. Yeah. Antioch and Pisidia. Antioch. That seemed to be a common name.
In that area, so you wanted to think, it's like Columbus. There's a lot of Columbus in that
there's a lot of Columbuses in the United States. And John, tell us why the Simpsons happen in Springfield. Every state has a Springfield. So that's why the Simpsons take place in Springfield. So same kind of thing. Who knows? It just, I thought it was just funny. It'll come up someday. Yeah. So anyway, verse 2. And Elijah said to Elisha, please stay here, for the Lord has sent me as far as Bethel. But Elisha said, as the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you. So they went down to Bethel. Where had the Lord sent Elijah? He starts out in Gilgal, and he's going to Bethel. And I think this is a common name too, isn't it? Yeah, southern Israel. This is the one. Doesn't Bethel mean city of God or something like that? I don't know. I might be speaking way bad Hebrew on that one. I borrowed this map off the internet, and I got three circles right there. We know where Jericho is, and that's where they're going to end up. That's the bottom right circle. The one in the middle is Bethel. The one above that is Gilgal, that they suspected this thing started at. The Gilgal, when it crossed the Jordan, would have been farther to the right. Actually, probably southwest of Jericho, I think, right? Anyways, that's kind of the journey it's going to take. It's not a big deal, but we're not always familiar with our Israeli geography, so or Canaan geography, so we'll throw it up there a little bit. Why do you think Elijah attempts to leave Elisha behind? He leaves him here. He tries to leave him here, and he tries to leave him in verse 4, and he'll try to leave him in verse 6. We won't look at his heart. But he says, please stay here. Why would Elijah try to get Elisha to stay behind? Yeah, you know, that's a good point. He says, the Lord sent me. And Elijah seems to know what's ahead of him. And just, he might not all know all the details. He might know that this is the end of him. I don't know, but he seems, but it is. It's one of those things that God sent me. You probably don't want to come. You don't want to be part of this. So. Yeah. It's going to be a tough separation. Yeah. I'm not going to leave you. Because the Lord lives and you yourself live, I'm not leaving you. Forget about it. Don't try to leave me behind. It's just, we're sticking together. Elijah's efforts seemed rather half-hearted. He never insisted that Elisha remain where he was. He seemed to be testing the younger man's loyalty and determination rather than trying to stop him. Elisha was aware that it was a momentous day, and he would not be diverted or distracted. That's from Gary Enrig in his commentary. So, although Elijah says, stay here, he doesn't try to hide from him. He doesn't forcibly stay, you know, nothing like that. So, maybe it's a test, maybe it's not. It doesn't really matter, I don't think, but that's where it seems to go. Verse 3, and the sons of the prophets who were in Bethel came out to Elisha and said to him, do you know that today the Lord will take away your master from over you? And he said, yes, I know it. Keep quiet. So who met Elijah and Elisha at Bethel? Sons of prophets? What's the sons of prophets? So what are sons of prophets? No clue, huh? That seems a weird term, but sons of prophets, they probably lived in a commune of prophets, a community of prophets. Some of them were probably in training to proclaim God's word. It's probably what it was. It was probably a school, a prophet school. Does that make sense? Something to keep on working. So that's probably what they've come upon, is this school of prophets or community of prophets. They were real prophets. And that's another thing that kind of hit me with that. And I looked at several commentaries and stuff to kind of figure that out of, if they're real prophets, what kind of training would prophets or training prophets? Maybe in the, what's already been written, what's already been said, so you can put things together? I don't know. How to stand firm in tough times? Because we already know that they've hidden in little pockets, and that's all exists. So I don't really know what the deal is. But this seems to be what they've walked up on. Yeah. Yeah, and they just passed it down generation to generation. That's the stuff was oral at that point anyways, a lot of it. Maybe in some written, but I think a lot of it was just oral tradition. Then they seemed to know that today would be the day that God would take Elijah to heaven. They made it clear. They know. So Elijah knows, Elisha knows, even these prophets, off in a corner, off in this other town. They know the same story. Today's the day. Don't you know? Yeah, we know, so keep quiet. Yeah. Elijah's like Elijah's the prophet at the time. Yeah, and Elisha is his trainee. And these guys are, they come out to tell them, we know. Like I say, we know. And I think some of it's for us, maybe. Reaffirms, it confirms this kind of thing. And I've actually got a question later of why a group of them? Why not just, why not just one? And part of it is you're putting eyewitnesses there. You know, this is a momentous occasion. This is something that is talked about. We're talking about it today. It's talked about in the kids' classes. If you want to have a really illustrative lesson, you can talk about today's thing with Elijah going up in a chariot of fire. Kids can relate to this. It's talked about commonly. And it's not just some kind of bizarre story. Now we have eyewitnesses. We have people who are a part of it and confirm it. Verse 5, Elijah said to him, Elisha, please stay here, for the Lord has sent me to Jericho. But he said, as the Lord lives, and you yourself live, I will not leave you. So they came to Jericho. The sons of the prophets who were at Jericho drew near to Elisha and said to him, do you know that today the Lord will take away your master from over you? He said, yes, I know it. Keep quiet. So the same thing in verse 4 and 5 as what we just saw in 2 and 3. And as the Bible typically does, it happens a third time. In verse 6, and Elijah said to him, please stay here, for the Lord has sent me to the Jordan. But he said, as the Lord lives and you yourself live, I will not leave you. So the two of them went on. Bible has stuff happen three times a lot of times. You'll see it. Paul repeats things three times. Jokes today, you usually have something happens once, happens twice, and the third time is a joke. Songs, pop songs, are usually three verses that the third one comes in different. And that's just a common thing with literature and stuff that we do. So one more time, Elijah tries to get rid of Elisha, but Elisha says, I'm sticking with you. Do you have people like this in your life? I got two proverbs up there, Proverbs 27:17. Iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. And 27:6, faithful are the wounds of a friend, profuse are the kisses of an enemy. Do you have friends that are this way? Friends that make you better, friends who will point out the things that are wrong in your life so you'll correct them. They're the ones that they'll talk to you and can probably hurt you the worst, but for the better. Whereas somebody else would try to just cover over it. Do you have friends like this? Would be with you to the very end?
Married one.
There you go. You married one. That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, and hopefully you've got people in your life that are this way. You're going to need them at points. My sister, when she was going through her chemo and stuff, she connected with some older friends that had called her, and they would call her each time that she went to chemo. That was the day that they made sure they would call her and talk to her while she spent all day under treatment. They would check in on her. Wanda checked in on her, didn't you? You checked on her every time. So it was. There were a lot of people that did that for her that she may not even, some of these people she hadn't really talked to in forever, but they still had that bond there. And that's a good thing. That's what we all need. If you don't have friends like that, make friends like that. I encourage it. Make friends like that. Jim Seltzer's laughing. He's got friends like that. So it's good. You got to have them. It's going to be tough times. Verse 7, 50 men of the sons of prophets also went and stood at some distance from them as they both were standing by the Jordan. So I got three questions. Who were the 50 men? Where were they? And why were they there? They're simple questions. There's nothing too deep in this whole thing. So who were the 50 guys? They're prophets. Sons of prophets. So they're kind of prophets in training. Where were they? Elijah and Elisha were at the Jordan River. Where were they? Back a ways.
Far enough so they weren't interfering, but close enough so they could see what's going on.
That's it. Close enough to see what's going on, but far enough away not to interfere with what's going on. So why were they there? Why were they at that distance? And probably just to be eyewitnesses. That would be my theory. The reason they were there at all, just that's 50 testimonies. Verse 8, then Elijah took his cloak, rolled it up, and struck the water. And the water was parted to the one side and to the other till the two of them could go over on dry land. If you use the King James and the New King James, you'll see instead of using the word cloak, they'll use the word mantle. Mantle is a special cloak made of animal hair. The Septuagint translates as sheepskin. Elijah's mantle signifies his authority and responsibility as a prophet of God. So he's got this coat, this jacket that he wears that signifies he is the prophet. It's made out of animal hair. Probably wool, but who knows what. Anyways, he takes it. What's he do with it? He whacks the water. He rolls it up. He folds it up. Whack. And what happens? Parts. Ground is dry. And firm. Do you see where I'm going with this? When have you seen this before? Twice. When they crossed the Jordan into Canaan? Yep, that's one time. When they left Egypt through the Red Sea. Two times, and the water's parted. And like I say, it's dry ground, it's firm ground. Matt spoke Sunday night. Was that the night he talked about it? Jumping out in the river, thinking that there's firm ground, but he sank in this deep. I will testify to that. I saw Steve try to get his hat one time at Cars Park, and he jumped off a dock, and the water couldn't have been a foot deep, but it went up at least to his waist. So just slime, yeah. But water does that. We all had the hurricane. We had water standing around. That ground became soft and cushy. So anywho, we've seen this before. Such a scenario calls attention to the similarities of Elisha's succession of Elijah and Joshua's succession of Moses. Therefore, the text stresses the continuity of God's message and God's messengers in Israel's history. So the same kind of thing as Joshua took over from Moses, you'll see the same kind of story as Elisha takes over from Elijah. So it's very similar. Verse 9. When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, "Ask what I shall do for you before I am taken from you." And Elisha said, "Please let there be a double portion of your spirit on me." So what does Elijah ask Elisha? Essentially, what do you want? I'll give you something, but what do you want? And Elisha requests a double portion of his spirit. Elisha's expression is used elsewhere to refer to the right of inheritance of the firstborn as double that of others. Elisha is not requesting twice the prophetic spirit of Elijah, rather the right of the office of Elijah, double the portion of other heirs to the prophetic office. That's August Conkle from his NIV commentary. So Elisha is asking basically not only the prophetic ability, but also to take Elijah's place. Elisha is essentially saying that he will count the cost, dedicate his whole life to continue Elijah's work, so he is his firstborn. In the church today, do we have anything that we do similar to this? If you're sitting there bewildered, it's because you haven't done it. But I know as a Wakiman deacon, as I took responsibilities that Chuck had, I took those responsibilities on the same as he would have. And I've taken those responsibilities on as an heir. Those became mine. This is why I became an elder, same thing. It's very, you got to weigh the cost of it. And there is, there's a lot of cost becoming a deacon or an elder. But you take that responsibility on as you're an heir of covering these responsibilities. And they weigh, about like Elisha. He didn't just say, I want to do it because it looks cool. He knew it would be a lifetime of denial, being chased around. People like Jezebel will be always there. It's tough. So it's there. We still have this kind of thing. You take it on as though you're an heir. I will treat it like it's my lifelong responsibility. Verse 10, he said, you have asked a hard thing. Yet, if you see me as I am being taken from you, it shall be so for you. But if you do not see me, it shall not be so. So Elijah acknowledges the difficulty in fulfilling Elisha's request, but he puts a stipulation on it. You can have this double portion if what? If you see me taken away, if you see, yeah. If you don't see me, you don't get it. And as they still went on and talked, behold, chariots of fire and horses of fire separated the two of them. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. Can you describe what happened? It's pretty descriptive right there, isn't it? You could probably ask kids back there today. You could waste a whole class period. Not waste a whole class period. You could use a whole class period. You could get them to draw some really descriptive pictures of what this is, right? They got chariots, they got horses, they got fire. They got two guys. They got Elijah over here, Elisha over here, and it's driving through the center. You could get some detailed pictures. Chuck's kids used to draw the most detailed pictures. I think Elizabeth, I've never seen anybody draw pictures like she drew pictures. She'd use every square inch of that piece of paper with stuff. But you could get kids today would draw this because they can see it. It's very descriptive. Yeah, they've walked all that way.
It wasn't like, stand over there.
No. Yeah, they're probably together, and he takes a step back when the fiery horses come cruising through there. It would have took something like that. Probably a lot of noise, a lot of heat, a lot of smoke. It took a lot to separate this shit. And since it came from God, it might have started small and expanded. Elisha see it? He had to, right? We can see it. So he had to see it. He was right there. So what's that mean? Yeah, he gets what he asked for. Gets his request. Did Elijah die? No. Are you sure? Are you 100% sure he didn't die? Yep. Okay. He didn't die. There are people that doubt that. There are people... What's that? Him and Enoch. Yeah, the two people in the Bible that they were taken. They didn't die. I guess there are Bible scholars that still fight this. I don't think all theologists believe in God. I think they study God, but don't always believe in him. It's a kind of a strange place to be, I think. But apparently there's still people that fight that battle. But it's pretty clear here that Elijah didn't die. He went with God. God came and got him. His chariots and horsemen symbolized strong protection as well as the forces of God's spiritual presence, which were the true safety of Israel. Donald Wiseman. And in verse 12, beginning it, and Elisha saw it, and he cried, my father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen. And he saw him no more. So who does Elisha refer to as father? First time I read this, I thought he was praying to God. I really did. First couple times, but it's not. He seems to be shouting to Elijah, calling him his father, in which we see he asked for an heir's portion. He's treating him as a dad. That's the relationship they had. It seems to be his dad. See, treats him like a dad. After seeing God, carrying on in verse 12, and into 13. Then he took hold of his own clothes and tore them in two pieces, and he took up the cloak of Elijah that had fallen from him and went back and stood on the bank of the Jordan. So after he sees God take Elijah to heaven, what did Elijah do? What's the first thing? He rips his clothes. He tears his clothes to represent what? Grief, mourning. Yeah, excessive mourning. This is not just somebody. This is somebody very close to him. Represents that. And he picks up the mantle of Elijah, the cloak. We use this phrase today, to take up the mantle. What's it mean when we do that today? Assume the responsibility. Somebody has a cause that they forward, and something happens to them. Somebody else picks it up and keeps going with it. We use this phrase, and it really ties back to this one exactly. And it's kind of a shame to see the word mantle disappear. Like I said, it was in the King James and New King James, but it's not in other versions. It's not in the NIV. It's not in the ESV. You'll see that word disappear out of the Bible over time. I kind of learned a little bit yesterday that a lot of the Baptist churches are going back to King James. They've abandoned the NIV for the changes that have been made in it lately, but a lot of them are going back to full-on 400-year-old King James Version, which is a little different, but anyways, some of them are going back that direction. So maybe the word will stick around. Verse 14, 2 Kings 2:14. Then he took the cloak of Elijah that had fallen from him and struck the water, saying, "Where is the Lord, the God of Elijah?" Then when he had struck the water was parted to one side and to the other, and Elisha went over. Why do you think Elisha asked this question, "Where is the God of Israel?" Think he had any doubts? Think he had any doubts of receiving maybe even what he'd asked for, that double portion? It could be. It might be just part of his grief, too. I think we can find ourselves at that point sometimes, asking questions which we later would say, why did I challenge God with that? That's not where I wanted to be. But that's kind of what he does. It seems like he's got a question even of himself. Do you think the parting of the Jordan answers his question? Do you think he expected that, John? Oh, yeah. Yeah, he would have known. Yeah, he would have known the story of Moses. And then him and Elijah walked. Elijah takes off the mantle. His cross. I mean, he's been part of it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the story of Moses. He knows the story of Joshua. He knows that story. But when it happens to himself, I don't even know. Maybe he thought it would. Maybe he didn't think, you know. Hits that Jordan, and it works. It's like, ooh, my. Look what happened, you know. I asked for this. I got what I asked for. It's always the be careful what you ask for, because you might just get it. All of a sudden, he's got a new responsibility in life. All of a sudden, his life changed dramatically. It's there. It answers his question. Where's the God of Israel? You're the spokesman. Don't lose sight of that. That's your job. Yeah. No. You make it yours. It might change a little bit. It'll sharpen you. It'll improve you. For me, a couple times here. I remember being in Marion's class, and Delora was sick, and I led class. First time I led a class other than just kids, and it was Am I ready for this? No. Did it happen? Yeah. In a time that Lloyd said, I can't see to study to teach this class. I ended up teaching this class. Are you kidding me? Auditorium class on Sunday morning? John, if I call you, would you start teaching this class? One phone call? Come on, man. You've been here long enough. You've been trained. It's a scary spot.
You've been sitting in class.
Yeah.
You know what you've done. I'm like that. Week after week. But then they say, now I want you to move around a different spot.
Yeah. Go, whoa. Whoa. Here? No. Yeah, and the classes, some of them have different feels. The fellowship room class is a whole lot different than this class. To go from one to the other is a little bit different. Yeah. There's a lot of that stuff. I can feel for Elisha. All of a sudden, yeah, I thought, no. It's hit me now. It's hit me. Verse 15, now when the sons of the prophets who were at Jericho saw him opposite them, they said, the spirit of Elijah rests on Elisha. And they came to meet him and bowed at the ground before him. After they saw what they saw, think they had questions? They're eyewitnesses and they saw what happened. Do you think they got a list of questions, don't they? What happened? Where's Elijah? Are you in charge? What are we going to do now? But as soon as Elisha hits the water and it parts, some of those questions go away. All of a sudden, you know, Elijah's not here no more. Elisha's the guy. The Spirit of God's with him. He's the prophet. That stuff starts answering itself with one whack of the cloak. And they said to him, behold now, there are with your servants 50 strong men. Please let them go and seek your master. It may be that the Spirit of the Lord has caught him up and cast him upon some mountain or in some valley. And he said, you shall not send. So basically they ask him, can we go search for Elijah? And Elisha says, no. Verse 17 and 18. When they urged him till he was ashamed, he said, send. They sent therefore 50 men. For 3 days they sought him, but did not find him. They came back to him while he was staying at Jericho. He said to them, did I not say to you, do not go? They annoyed him till he was ashamed. Let's go look for Elijah. Ain't no sense in going. He's not there. They finally just says, just go. They come back after looking for 3 days, and they're like, can't find him. And it's like, duh, I told you he wasn't there. Well, you're wasting your time. Why would God want this included in Scripture? I like to ask a question sometimes. Why in the world is that verse there? Just disappeared. And this adds more evidence to it, right? That he's gone. He didn't hide. I read it's the article in the bulletin today that has something about the swoon factor, that maybe Jesus just kind of passed out and they kind of buried him in the cave and he came back alive and walked away, which obviously is not the case, right? But apparently some people believe this kind of stuff and they would have believed the same thing about Elijah. So the thing is, search for him. Find him. You send out 50 guys to find him. If he's around, you'll find him. There's no evidence. They got eyewitnesses that he's gone. Because of Elijah and prophets like him, for a time, the northern kingdom of Israel, in spite of its general spiritual degeneration, continued to have pockets of faithfulness to the God of Israel. Political leadership became more and more uncertain. While Elisha was prophet, the dynasty of Omri and Ahab came to an end. Jezebel died horribly. They started a new dynasty. Amos becomes the last prophet. After Jeroboam dies, the last prophet under Jeroboam. After Jeroboam dies, northern kingdom lasts like 20 years. Anyways, the Assyrians come in and they wipe it out. That's the end of Israel. So it's kind of downhill from this point. Next week, that's kind of the end of the story for that. Next week, Chuck's going to teach on Elijah and John the Baptist. So I got my picture of bees for John the Baptist. So I could have a picture of a beard, but either way, I'll go with the bees. So anyways, we're moving to the New Testament on this. So thank you all.